This is Graham Mount, Professor Emeritus of Laurentian University's Department of History in Sudbury, Ontario. And this is the first in a series of podcasts about travels in search of history. For further information and accompanying photographs, see my recently published book, Historic Pictures, Photos of Places in Transition, published in Toronto by Tellwell in 2025. History has a broad appeal. Most bookstores sell history books, and historians enjoy a greater market for their work than do scholars of almost any other discipline. Many Canadians, and people of other nationalities too, arrange vacations around visits to historic sites, places where the first Europeans settled or tried to establish homes in North America. Battlefields of the U.S. Civil War and the two 20th century World Wars, Barkerville in British Columbia and Dawson City in the Yukon, centers of gold rushes, the room in Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island, where Canada's Fathers of Confederation negotiated the birth of a new country, Winston Churchill's birthplace in England, and Adolf Hitler's bunker in Berlin, Germany. Only the irresponsible would try to witness history in the making of such places as the Gaza Strip, North Korea, or the Ukrainian-Russian battlefront. But safer places are available, and this series will discuss some of them. Certain historical events stick in almost everyone's mind. On the 8th of May, 1945, I was 2 1/2 months shy of my 6th birthday, but I do remember VE Day, the day when Nazi Germany surrendered. Our kindergarten teacher announced, "The war is over." When we left school, every home was flying a Union Jack. Canada would not have its own flag for almost another 20 years. I asked someone, "Why all the flags?" And she replied, "The war is over." For the rest of her life, my mother, who claimed to have limited historical knowledge, preserved newspapers from that day. Most of us alive on the 22nd of November, 1963, remember where we were when we learned of the assassination of President John Kennedy. Similarly, we recall the afternoon in July 1969 when the first astronauts landed on the moon. We have strong memories of 9/11, the 11th of September, 2001, when hijacked passenger aircraft crashed into New York's Twin Towers and the Pentagon. Non-historians often have a vague memory of events prior to their birth, but enough of us have sufficient sense of history that historical tourism is alive and well. Some historic tourism is the result of sheer luck. For totally unrelated reasons, my 11-year-old son Andrew and I happened to be in Aberdeen, Scotland in October 1989, when that city was celebrating the life of Bishop William Elphinstone, who lived from 1431 to 1514. Andrew had never heard of Bishop Elphinstone, and anything which I might once have learned, I had forgotten. Both of us emerged from downtown Aberdeen that day, better informed because of our unanticipated experience. In October 1989, when Andrew and I visited that city, residents of Aberdeen dressed in period costumes, and they recreated scenes which showed what life could have been like in Elphinstone's time. Volunteers promoted the sale of Elphinstone ale produced by a local brewery. Musicians performed music from his era. A juggler demonstrated the kind of entertainment which was available. Architects had erected buildings which resembled those of the 15th century. One of Scotland's most renowned 20th century historians, Robert L. Mackey, described Elphinstone, quote, as one of the greatest jurists and statesmen in Europe, unquote. Mackey regarded Elphinstone as, quote, the wisest, unquote, of the counselors of King James III, who governed Scotland from 1460 to 1488. Alas, James III's successor, King James IV, 1488 to 1513, did not always accept Elphinstone's advice. Scotland and England were still separate, usually hostile countries. In 1513, As the threat of war loomed between France and England, Elphinstone advised King James IV to remain neutral. Scottish interests were not at stake, and James had no brothers, only a one-year-old son. If James IV were killed in battle, the Scotland, which Elphinstone had done so much to develop, might lapse into chaos. James disregarded the bishop's advice and died in battle. Yet, contrary to his worst fears, Elphinstone's legacy has survived. In 1495, as an advisor to King James IV, Elphinstone founded the University of Aberdeen, one of the oldest universities in what is now the United Kingdom. To do so, Elphinstone needed permission from both King James IV and Pope Alexander VI, Pope from 1492 to 1503, and both men granted that permission. Given the era's transportation and communication systems, negotiations must have been painfully slow, but the results have been long-lasting. Medieval Scotland had been a violent place, and Reformation Scotland, a couple of generations after Elphinstone's death, was a religiously intolerant one. John Knox, leader of the movement which converted Lowland Scots to Presbyterianism, thought that Roman Catholics deserved the death penalty. On the other hand, Knox did promote literacy. Knox wanted Presbyterians to read the Bible. Perhaps he did not foresee that once they could read the Bible, they could read anything. Happily, the Enlightenment period, roughly the 18th century, transformed Scotland, and people from Scotland became leaders in business and commerce, engineering, government, and professions around the globe. Scottish universities deserve credit for the Scottish Enlightenment, and Bishop Elphinstone deserves credit for one of Scotland's major universities.